Growing a business is hard, but it does not have to be. Once a week, we take a break from the hustle and bustle in business to talk about innovations and what's new in the C-suite. This is the Fractional C-Suite Retreat, and I'm Joseph Frost. Pull up a seat at the fire, grab a drink, smoke a cigar, and just join me as we relax, learn, and get inspired. This retreat is sponsored by Your CMO, helping organizations grow with better marketing strategy. Welcome. Today's guest is a marketing executive. She has 25 years of experience successfully managing go-to-market strategies for startups and high-growth technology companies. She believes strongly in working collaboratively. She likes to use big words. And she is a CMO at our company, Your CMO. So welcome, Stacy Kamigaki. How are you?
I'm well, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great. It's always good to have one of our own on the show. And I say that a little bit in jest. You're definitely your own woman, but glad to have you on our team.
Awesome. Thank you. I am too.
So let's get started. I know that the question I like to pose at the beginning of the show is simply what's an opportunity that you see that you think other C-suite leaders should know about?
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking about that. And one of the biggest opportunities I think for the C-suite today is building more intelligence into their business, right? And leveraging data across all areas, across all departments to basically, one, collectively make decisions, share more information and insights across the teams so that people can bring more buy-in, you get everyone on the same page, and they can even ask more relevant questions, bring their perspectives to the conversation.
How do companies do that?
Ah, great question. You know, I'll draw from a little bit of my experience in a few of the companies I've recently worked for. And of course, as head of marketing, you know, I'm going to look at the marketing discipline first, right? So for example, you've probably heard the term data-driven marketing, and that's been around for a while. And data-driven marketing really focuses on understanding the buyer, right? What are their preferences? What's their profiles, their needs, and even the behaviors, right? We start to really track their behavior throughout the buyer journey. And this helps us bringing in that data to guide marketing strategy and the programs that we invest in. It helps us drive bigger ROI because we have that data to say, here's what's working and here's what's not. So that's just on the marketing side, right? So we look at, you know, where they buy, as well as how they buy. And it's really interesting over the course of my career, for example. I know when we started, when social media became a big thing, right? But I sell B2B. And so the main platforms that we used to spend money and market in were LinkedIn and Twitter, right? And so, you know, most recently over the last several years, we've had, you know, people ask us, agencies ask us, well, what about Facebook and Instagram? And we're like, that's, you know, great for B2C, but not really for B2B. Well, do we really understand any shifts in the buyer behavior? Because a lot of feedback that came to us from those experts who maybe tried it out with other organizations did find that there was more and more activity, success in those platforms. And so I think it's, you know, understanding your buyer, having that those data data-driven insights, but staying on top of that and keeping pulse on maybe shifts in the market and the way that the buyer buys. So that's just a marketing example of how I usually bring that in early in to an engagement.
Yeah. Well, really from a marketing side, there's so many more metrics than there ever have been. Yeah. And so sifting through the data and understanding what the right insight, or not insight, but the right metrics are and gleaning insights, no easy task. So what do you tell somebody who's just got information overload? Like, how do I make sense of this data? I've got it all in front of me, but how do I make it make any sense?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's been something that also has evolved because I don't know, maybe about 10 years ago, big data was big, right? And so we were hearing a lot about that, but I read an article recently about, you know, we need to look at small data groupings, increments, and to help us make decisions in a very focused way. And so I would say you don't have to look at the vast amount of data and drinking from a fire hose, but really hone in on the things that you think can move the needle. So I talked about, you know, marketing. And the other thing is, you know, very important is really that collaboration across the C-suite. So once I put the marketing metrics in place, you know, just the last few companies that I've worked for, you know, I also collaborated a lot as they grew to see the value of data, you know, on the client success side, right? We need to look at the customer experience feedback. They're in touch with the customers. Are we solving problems if issues come up? What's the net promoter score? You know, those type of things really help us. And because in a service organization where you add services onto the technology, they are a key touch point because they're customer facing. So a lot of the data they can bring back post-sale is also very valuable to the marketing and sales department, but also to, I think, the business as a whole. And then again, on the financial side. So, you know, marketing and CFOs sometimes, you know, because we like to spend and they like to pull back, it's really important to collaborate to really understand. So what is the financial leaders looking at, right? The last one, for example, was in recurring revenue, MRR software. And so some of the things that they were looking at were, you know, the customers. Where were they coming from? Were they coming from the channel or from the direct? You know, what was the mix of current customers? Were we upselling to them versus net new? What's the lifetime value? Are we increasing those sales? So again, there's a lot of interconnected data, but that directly impacts sales and marketing and the growth of the company.
Sure. It's marketing spans lots of different areas of the business.
Yes.
Operations, sales, you know, we don't really, you know, impact the financial side, but they certainly can impact us with budgets and expectations. But it can be like the glue, if you will, or the source of all data truth could live in the marketing department if you wanted it to, because it does incorporate so much of the different areas of the business. Do you see in your experience that marketing is used as that kind of bridge, or is it marketing usually more siloed and they just bring them in when they need leads?
Yeah. I think, and again, I think that's why that's one of the biggest opportunities right now, is because it isn't traditionally used that way. I think you're facing some different obstacles, whether it be systems, right? There's different systems that are capturing the data. You need to make sure that they are all talking to each other, right? Whether it be your, you know, support tickets and those type of things and the different reports of client success runs to, you know, QuickBooks or some of the larger ERP systems that's holding the, you know, the revenue information. All of those need to be able to talk to each other. So system level, you know, you need to have that foundation built. When it comes to the different decision makers, I think all of the C-suite needs to have ownership in different parts of that to make collaboratively to make decisions together. I think marketing can help. And I think if you have a data-driven marketer, they can bring expertise from, you know, past experience.
So it's one of the nuances of being a fractional CMO is you are not in the organization as much or like sometimes even physically in the organization like other C-suite leaders are. So does that compound the problem with marketing getting its fingers into things and getting access to the data and showing data as a valuable, you know, valuable part of marketing? Or is it indifferent in your experience?
I think it's indifferent if you can show the value of data. If marketing can, and again, that's where I start, but if marketing can show some data insights that are impacting the business, right? I think it's really important to look at some of the metrics, typical marketing metrics of, how many visitors to a site, how many clicks, those type of things. But I drill further into where is that leading to, you know, leading us, right? What are the conversion rates from a sales perspective? Sales and marketing have to align, and they have to work very closely together. So, you know, what are the conversion rates throughout the buyer's journey? So those are some of the metrics that we have to uncover and we have to share to the leadership. Because I wear two hats, right? As a CMO, I wear the marketing hat, and that's very important to help drive business and increase sales. But I am a chief officer, right? So I also have a business hat, and I am part of the executive team that all of us should care about ways in which we can move the needle. And so I think, you know, marketing, if we have a seat at the table, can demonstrate the value that we're doing with very targeted programs driven by data and what our buyers prefer, then I think we start to build that credibility and that trust. And then I think there's ways that other executives, because they, you know, again, they care. They want the company to succeed. They want to be part of something greater. They too will start to look at, oh, well, maybe I should be, you know, looking at these KPIs, these different metrics to see. And then as we start to share that, we could see how that interaction takes place as well.
Yeah. What are some of the insights that the customer experience data can give to the marketing team to help with lead generation?
Yeah, well, one example I gave about social media platforms, right? So it's really about where do I invest? Where do I put my money? And so to have those customer experience insights to really ask the customer, right? Because if we don't, then we're making a lot of assumptions. Right. We think they go to we think they open our emails. You know, we think that they go to these different platforms, those type of things. So we guess on what their behavior is. Well, what if we asked those different buyers and found, you know, patterns, nuances, those type of things so that we can say, you know, based on collectively this group of buyers, they basically buy through the channel. Okay. Well, maybe we need to invest in our channel programs. Maybe we need to bring awareness and sales enablement because, again, I go B2B tech, right? So it's a big investment, most likely 200,000 and above in an investment. So they often turn to trusted advisors. Well, who are those, right? Especially for smaller organizations who maybe don't have the brand recognition, you know, the path to the customer may be different.
Yeah, and I know we internally at URCMO, we spend a lot of time understanding the buyer journey, mm-hmm. and in doing so, we'll interview with new customers in the last 6 to 12 months to understand what those newer customers' buyer journeys are. But also, I know a lot of times in marketing, we're doing Net Promoter Scores and trying to understand how a current customer feels about the product or service. And there's, you know, besides NPS, there's other surveys that we do, and there's other feedback that we get from an existing customer. And I'm just curious, like, is there valuable insights to be learned from existing customer experiences that can impact lead generation and conversion? Or is an existing customer, you know, once they're a customer, their buyer journey is the only thing that we wanted to learn from them. Everything else that happens afterward doesn't impact bringing in a new customer in.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think all of the data is important. And current customers, you know, some could be as new as a month ago, right? Really understanding, you know, who all was influenced in that buying decision. And I think it's really important to keep a pulse on that as time passes, right? So not looking, probably not going to take data consider the data as valid if it was from customers who purchased 10 years ago, right? And they're just using our system, say storage, right? Data storage, right? Using our system, but those within the past few years, especially, because I think it's really important to try and have that recency and that relevancy of the different buying options that are available to buyers in today's world.
Yeah, I know. When we talk to prospects about our service and we share with them that we do these customer interviews, the first feedback we get is, oh, our customers love us. And it's rare. Then we have to explain, well, that's not what we're interviewing for. We're interviewing to find out how they found you and what challenges they were facing when they went to look for you. And because a business owner, their mindset is customer interviews is all about how well they like my product or service. And a marketer's lens is oftentimes different, which is how did you find us and how we find more people like you. Is there feedback about how well they like our service that's valuable to marketers?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our service is, it's the product, right? Same with, if we really bring in all departments, right? I haven't mentioned HR yet, but the people, right? And hiring and having the people and, having them all in, right? That they feel part of an organization. They know where it's going. They're 100% behind it. And that comes through in every experience, every touch point with the customer. So absolutely is important to understand how their experience went and how satisfied they were. Because one, will they buy again? If they're MRR customers, we have to worry about churn. There's competitors out there and you can, change in a month, less than. And so so you really need to take into consideration all of those aspects. Marketing's job is not done. And everyone in the organization is a marketer. Marketing to a client and selling to a client is never done. In the current client base, I'm seeing more and more is actually your bread and butter. And so you really want to protect that.
I think that's the big aha that a lot of people miss about marketing is, yes, we can bring in leads and that's our focus. And of course we have to, that's one of marketing's major responsibilities, but also extending client lifetime value by reducing churn, looking for opportunities for upsells or new products or enhancements. Like marketing can play a big role in that, which may be a more valuable role for some companies, especially B2B tech. Mm-hmm. Retention and churn and client lifetime value goes a long way in ultimately valuing that company in the light of an exit or other purposes. But those numbers might be more important than net new customers.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you think from an entrepreneur perspective, Joe, right? You think about, you're always thinking about new things, new ideas, right? And the best marketer I know of is Jeff Bezos, right? I mean, he has, right? Everyone's standard is Amazon, right? And so what was he when they first started? It isn't what they are today. And it's always that continuous improvement, what new services, ways that I can engage my current customers. And, one of the last companies I worked for, over 80% of our sales for that year were new services, new products to the existing customer base. And I agree. I think that's untapped sometimes.
Yeah, completely. One of your greatest assets is the existing customer base. New customers are much harder to find, much more expensive to find than retaining an existing customer. The data is super clear on that. You touched on recruiting. And I think recruiting is just a marketing effort and the products, the company and the prospects to hire. Recruiting has gotten really difficult lately for a lot of companies. And if you put your marketing hat on, what kind of advice would you give your CEO or your CHRO peer from a marketing perspective to enhance or help the recruiting efforts?
I honestly think that what employees are looking for today has changed so much. I think they want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. I think they want something that they can bring value to, that they are recognized and rewarded. I think culture is such a big part of recruitment right now. And so I think I definitely think it's beyond marketing. I think it starts with the CEO having someone for me, right? And someone with a clear vision, someone that communicates that very well so I can see and agree with, yes, that's what I want to be a part of. I believe in that company. I believe in its products, and I want to be a part of that. So I think it starts within. So HR and CEO are a big part of that. And then just communication, you know, having, building and amplifying that culture and leveraging that. I think that's where the marketing can come in and work real closely with those key stakeholders to amplify and get that out in the market from a recruitment perspective. But, you know, very much like a buyer, right? Buyers do a lot of research before they purchase a product. Employees do a lot of research before they sign up to, you know, join an organization. And you've got a lot of those Glassdoor, they're looking at reviews, right? And so what, if we look at full transparency, you know, of companies and such, you know, what are the people who are part of it saying about it? And so I think that is so important to hopefully bring the best and offer a really great environment for these employees. And then I think recruitment's easier and hopefully retention as well.
Yeah. And certainly the type of employment has changed. I mean, we are in a fractional executive space, and that wasn't, at least in marketing, that wasn't around 5 years ago. I mean, it wasn't mm-hmm. popular. How has that changed in your view? An employer's access to really great talent at a price point that's, you know, a fraction of what a full-time person would be.
I think it's exciting. You know, if you look at my career, I've worked for smaller organizations, SMB. And so what I'm excited about as with fractional CMOs is it brings, and let me go back. I've always liked the challenge of making those smaller guys appear bigger. Right. And the internet helped with that. Right. But appear bigger, you know, a lot of capabilities, a lot of, you know, smart team members, customer oriented. And I really appreciate that opportunity to compete with the big gorillas out there. I think fractional CMO, fractional positions help as well, because, you know, the enterprises, they can afford to bring in the in-house C-suite at, you know, the SMBs, they can't. And so how can you tap expertise and experience? Because that you can't get that just by giving someone a title. It really comes over time. And so, you know, with the fractional C-suite, you have the opportunity to really take some of the most talented people out there and their expertise. And I've worked with a lot of them. We have the peer-to-peers, right, on your CMO. And I'm impressed every week of, you know, the different levels of expertise and that they bring. And that's what, you know, businesses will be able to tap into. And again, I think it will just help them propel their business without a huge, you know, cost for them.
As we're going into the, you know, what looks to be some sort of recession, the fractional option for talent becomes even more appealing because cost is a real consideration. And with the fractional model, you can leverage somebody's expertise in a way that you can't by trying to hire that same person full time. And a lot of times companies don't need 20 hours a week of Stacy. Maybe they need 10.
Right.
Or certainly don't need 40. And so the Stacy now has the flexibility to give 10 or 20 or 30 in a fractional way. She's only got 40 to give unless you work extra. So you're going to give some of it to other clients. Uh-huh. That's the kind of the trade-off is that the employer's got to split the person with another person. But if, as long as it's a full-time fractional person, you're still responsive. You're still there. You're still available, and you're sharing your talent with multiple companies. So it's a real win-win, especially going into today's or tomorrow's economy.
Right, right. One of the other values I think that they can benefit from is real-time learning. Right, that's transferable. Right, as a fractional. Right, I'm working with say three different clients, and so learnings that I gain from one, program or strategy with one client, we can take those lessons and apply them again in the now, right? And so I think there's also real-time benefits of working with someone who's very plugged in and testing things across various companies and clients.
Yeah. Well, I like to think that at your CMO, we scale wins. So a small win or a big win or a win that any client has, not only can that CMO share it with another client, like you mentioned, but because of our peer-to-peer, we can share it with each other and share it with multiple clients. And we can truly scale the wins that our CMOs are having with their clients in a way that you can't get from hiring a full-time person. You can't get it from an agency. You can't get it from an independent fractional CMO. You can only get it from an organization like ours. And I think that's a huge value proposition for prospective companies for sure.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. What does Stacy like to do for fun outside of work?
Well, I'm a family gal. So I love spending time with my family. I have two adult children, so I am a bit of an empty nester, but still love spending time with them and my husband. And I would say we're a bit of adventure seekers. Right. So we love to travel. And, you know, in most of our travels, seek new adventures. The Caribbean's our favorite, one of our favorite destination spots, the different islands. But when we're here, I'm based in Colorado. And so, you know, just enjoying the outdoors, the beauty out here. Love getting in the mountains, hiking. We also own a boat. So we go boating in the reservoirs around here. And very active, staying very active.
I'm a soon-to-be empty nester myself. So share with me the joys of empty nesting.
Oh, I can focus on me and my husband and doing some, you know, kind of this new chapter, doing some things that we're passionate about, more of that traveling. Our kids were very active in sports. So, you know, the weekends, the nights, we're always getting them to and from the courts and fields. And stuff. So yeah, there's that freedom is really nice. One of my kiddos is in California, so they're not close. But again, a good portion of our traveling is going to visit her and visiting all parts of California as well. So
yeah, it gives you an excuse to travel or a place to travel for sure.
Yep.
So we've got one left and, we're looking forward to, what our next chapter looks like as well. Mm-hmm. But I know there'll be some sadness that goes with it, just missing that activity and being, you know, close to your kids. But I found, I don't know if you've seen it yet with your kids, two of my kids have been out of college for a couple years ish each. Mm-hmm. And they're going through all these career decisions and journeys and, and they come back and they ask questions to mom and dad and they want advice and experience. And I just I've personally got a lot of joy about participating in that experience, you know, as a consultant almost to my kids. You know, I don't want to tell them what to do. I want them to figure it out, but I'm glad that they appreciate my input. And, it's also energizing living vicariously through them because the possibilities they have at this age and all the routes they can go and the choices they make. It's whatever they want it to be. It's like at this stage, they can't make a wrong decision. It feels like.
Yeah, absolutely. I love those adult conversations and, you know, being more of a friend than the parenting. And then also I don't mind sharing, you know, if I knew, you know, then what I know now, I would have done this differently, a few lessons, you know, and things like that. But it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It's like being a fractional parent, right?
Yeah, exactly.
we contrast that right now with a daughter who's a senior in high school. And so we still have to be very much a parent, hands-on more than we'd like at times. But then we have these young adults that are, we can't parent it. My daughter came home last weekend and she spent the weekend with us and she went out with friends one night and they went across an hour drive away and and she didn't come home. I assumed she was spending the night out at her friend's house. And Amy, my wife, was like, where's Julie? Is she coming home? And I go, she's probably spending that. Well, she didn't tell us. She didn't. She's an adult. She's not, you know, she doesn't have to. So the next day, Amy's like, it would have been nice if she had told us, Julie. She goes, well, I've been used to being out on my own. And remember, I had to tell mom and dad what I'm doing.
I know. We still worry. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. But when they're away in California, we worry a little less, I think, than when they're sitting in our 60-mile proximity.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I will say I'm happy that our kids have the same interests and likes too, you know? So my big thing is, and I mentioned the Caribbean, I really want all of us to get scuba certified. We've done our first dive in Cozumel, but we've not been scuba certified. And so I'm like, okay, Christmas gift, but then they both have significant others. And so I'm like, okay, so I had to ask both the significant others, would you be interested in, you know, diving and getting your, you know, and they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, great. You know, and stuff. So.
Yeah. It gets expensive as they grow. You got plus ones, twos, threes over time. For sure. We took our whole family this summer to Costa Rica. That was a big trip for us. And we didn't know if everybody would be able to make it because they have vacations. They have to request off, time off. Mm-hmm. But we were able to get everybody, all six of us there. But we specifically said no significant others. That's an expensive trip. And
yes.
And they were okay with it. But
yeah.
Holidays are different. There'll be plenty of significant others around.
Right.
Thanksgiving and
family's growing.
Yeah, it is. It's fun.
Yeah.
What is boating like in Colorado? Is it cold water? Like, can you get in the water?
It is.
What do you do?
July, you can get in the water. It's not like the ocean. Like my daughter, you know, she kind of went to school in SLO. And so the central part of California, and they're all wearing wet suits when they're surfing, right? So no, you don't have to do that and stuff. 70s, I think. The reservoirs, you know, there's not a lot of water. So everyone goes to the same destination. I grew up in the Midwest. So, you know, lots of different lakes and things like that. But
you go to Lake Mac?
No. Where's that?
McConaughey.
Oh, McConaughey. I've heard about it. I actually haven't been there yet. But so we go to Horsetooth and Carter and up to Glendo, which is up in Wyoming. But our favorite place is Lake Powell, which is far down right now. Yeah. And so, it's fun. We love.
So the water's really low in Lake Powell?
It is. Yeah. Some areas you can't get to that you used to be able to. Yeah.
What's the prognosis? Is it going to fill back up?
Nature will tell, you know. We have to have lots of good snowpack years and not anytime soon, I don't think.
I think I heard there might be a wet and snowy winter for many of us, and that would be helpful, right?
That would be great. Yeah.
How much skiing do you do?
I personally, the rest of my family does ski. I snowshoe. It's my fault because I had knee problems when I was in high school, had surgery. And, you know, as you get older, it probably needs to be relooked at. And so I don't ski, but I love snowshoeing and, getting up in the mountains and playing in the snow. Yeah.
What is snowshoeing just like hiking with big flappy feet?
It is kind of like a racket on your, and they're not like
rackets. Yeah, I've seen them, but what is the purpose of the racket? Is it because you're walking on like fresh packed snow and it keeps you from falling through? Is that?
You can walk in 2 to 4 feet of snow. It's a great workout and stuff. And so you sink, it won't let you sink all the way. Oh, and snowmobiling is the other winter sport I love.
Now I heard that is, that can be quite incredibly dangerous. How do you snowmobile? Tell me.
Well, we go to like Grand Lake and it will, they have different areas that, the park and stuff like that, that you can go back into. And it's just this open, kind of like a bowl, right? Just open snow area. And you just kind of go wherever. And as long as it's, you know, not crowded, which they do to try to control that and stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah. I have a couple of friends that like are very aggressive snowmobilers and they go like all over the place, tipping over sideways, upside down. It's like dangerous, people getting injured. It sounded a little bit too much for me. So there is a more passive, scenic way to snowmobile.
Yes, more controlled. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, it's probably like
whatever your taste, whatever your temperament.
Yeah, it's the difference between maybe like dirt biking and riding a moped.
Right, exactly.
I prefer the moped. Mm-hmm. I'm not much of a dirt bike or Harley guy. I've never ever ridden.
No, I've done moped. I've not done motorcycle. Yeah.
Yeah, I got a little moped for my son when he was in high school because we needed an extra car. We have four kids, so we just couldn't buy six cars. It didn't make any sense. So I got him a moped and he loved it. He was riding back and forth to school. And then my daughter, who's just a couple years younger than him, when it was time for her to get a car, I said, well, we got this moped. She goes, Dad, I'm not riding a moped. There's no way. Because I wear dresses. I'm a cheerleader. I can't wear.
Oh, like, the hair.
The hair. Yeah. So yeah. She got a car.
Yeah. That probably suits her.
Well, good. Well, I'm excited to visit you in Colorado. I'll be out there this weekend, but I don't think I can sneak in a visit. We're taking my son on a trip to Estes for the weekend. So we'll be out there enjoying the nature. But when I do get out there in person, we'll spend some more time together, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you need to know of any good hikes in Estes, I can send a couple of my faves.
Oh, what are your faves?
Gem Lake is really good. And, but you always remember you have to probably have reservations right now, because ever since the pandemic, I think they've kept the reservations, and I think Lily Lake, is one that doesn't need reservations, but, there's probably at least a dozen different trails up there, but those are two of my favorites.
I didn't even think that we need a reservation. So I'll check into that.
Oh yeah. And if you're going into Rocky Mountain, the national park, make sure that, check into that.
Okay. Well, thanks for the warning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went up there with my sister one time and we had to turn right back around. So.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I better do that. Hopefully it's not too late. My wife would kill me.
You should be good. I think it's just the day before. Yeah.
Just the day before. Okay. Well, that's good to know. Well, Stacy, thanks for being on the podcast. It was a lot of fun, and I'm sure our guests enjoyed it as well, but thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And I look forward to, talking to you soon.
And
thanks, Joe.
And to our listeners, thank you. Look forward to talking to you further. If you want to reach out to Stacy, if something she said sparked your interest, if you want to figure out what size snowshoe she wears or anything else, you can reach her at stacy@yourcmo.com, yourcmo.com. But is there any place else, Stacy, you'd like people to reach out to you?
Sure. I'd love to connect with you on LinkedIn. Feel free to reach out, and look forward to it.
Okay. We'll have those contact details in the show notes. So look forward to talking to everybody next week. Thank you for listening, and we will talk soon.
And that's a wrap. There's another successful episode of the Fractional C-Suite Retreat. See our show notes and more episodes at fractionalcsuiteretreat.com. This podcast is sponsored by Your CMO, helping organizations grow, save time and money with better marketing strategy and fractional execution. Visit them at yorcmo.com, yourcmo.com, spelled wrong on purpose.